here sometimes struggles with getting along with their spouse. If you are in a committed Catholic marriage, but sometimes your spouse drives you nuts, you're going to want to stay tuned for this episode. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the real battle in Catholic marriage with my beautiful special guests, Jean and Colin McKenzie. That's what's coming up today on the Possibility Mom Live. Hello, everyone. It is so nice to be back with you here today on the podcast. I love talking about marriage, mainly because it is something that I feel like I need to constantly work at. But in my own life, I find it's the thing that can be easily swept under the rug, so to speak. That and my physical fitness, if I'm just being really honest with you. Those are the just areas that's kind of like, oh, I'll get to it later. You know, when a challenge with a child arises, I don't know about you, but I'm very quick to try to, you know, fix it, whatever that challenge might be. Things with my work, when obstacles come up, I can be very quick to tackle. But when I'm noticing that there is strife or potential resentment or challenges in my marriage, I'll just be honest, it becomes something that I'm like, oh, of course I want to do that. Of course I want to work on my marriage, but it's an easy thing for me to put on the back burner. And I don't know about you, maybe you can relate to what I'm saying, but if you're listening to this podcast, you are probably a person of high integrity and intention, and you want to keep your marriage at the forefront. You agree with me that your marriage is it creates the environment. It creates an incredible environment for your home, your family, your children, your domestic church to thrive. If we don't work on our marriages, our domestic church does not thrive. So those are some of the things that we're going to be unpacking today on the podcast with my special guests. Before we get into that, I want to share with you that Stephanie Donahue and I are back with our six-figure business blueprint. This is a live event that Stephanie and I do together just a few times a year. In 2023, we did it twice, and this is the first time we're doing it again in 2024. And it is a live coaching event to help you craft your six-figure business blueprint. What do I mean by a six-figure business blueprint? If you are looking to make a significant income, so income that can support your family, that can support Catholic school education, that can potentially even support other families in their pursuit of doing the same, we are going to be unpacking how I've done it in my own business. And what I love about Stephanie's experience, and I just love Stephanie, and you'll love her too. She's no stranger to this podcast. She's interviewed me and she's come on a few times. She has helped businesses earn 5, 6, 7, 8 figures. And what's so interesting about her experience is that she brings multiple businesses. So I have the experience of my own and the clients that I've coached, but she brings in this incredible breadth of different kinds of businesses, different kinds of entrepreneurs. One of the things that we created together that I just love is 40 skills that entrepreneurs need to embody for entrepreneurial success, based very much especially on the number of clients that Stephanie has worked with and the patterns that she was noticing in her clients. I want to share with you my screen if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can go and view this page at learn.thepossibilitymom.com/six-figure-blueprint. That's learn.thepossibilitymom.com/six-figure-blueprint. This is for Catholic moms who want to build wealth without guilt. It's a short live 5-day coaching event where every day for about 60 minutes, it usually goes longer because that's just how I roll. I get to talking and I love coaching. And so we end up going a little bit over, but 60 minutes typically, April 29th to May 3rd, 2024, where we're going to show you, even if you've only made a few thousand dollars or you're overwhelmed, all the steps of running an online business. We're going to show you how you can build a six-figure business. If you're a Catholic mom and you're at the beginning, this is going to be an incredible, I hate to use the word crash course, but that's kind of what's coming to mind. You're going to really see and understand what are the components to build a business that can scale. And really what Stephanie and I have very much in common is a shared passion for building the Catholic economy, meaning putting more wealth in the hands, and the heart that I have behind it is Catholic women, but of course, you know, men, I like when men make money too. But when people with great values have money, we're able then to support things that are good, true, and beautiful. Many of you know my involvement with the Guiding Star Project. I'm the president of this charity. And I think about this in a very different way now that I am in the helm of a nonprofit in the United States. We are grateful and rely on the generosity of our donors. And that comes when people of integrity, people with great moral judgment, people with great values who believe in the sanctity of life and the true, the good, and the beautiful, when they are able to put their funds towards these causes, this is how we thrive, but it requires those people to have funds in the first place. And that is why I believe so much, and I believe that it's just on my part of my unique call to sanctity, is to help specifically Catholic moms make money online. All right, so join us for the six-figure business blueprint. You can go to learn.thepossibilitymom.com/six-figure-blueprint to join us. I'm so excited to bring to the podcast one of the members of my mastermind, a Catholic mom who cares about building the Catholic economy and who has been helping many people over the years in her psychology practice. And she's going to be joined by her husband, Colin, who has a distinguished 32-year career with the Canadian military. Everybody, welcome to the Possibility Mom Live, Jean and Colin McKenzie. Jean, Colin, how are you doing?
Hi. We're doing well.
Welcome to the podcast. Jean and Colin, let's start off with, how did the two of you first meet?
Well, we met in a philosophy of ethics course, so at university. So we both went to St. Francis Xavier University in Nova Scotia, but Colin's from Calgary, Alberta, and he came all the way out to university there, but we didn't run into each other until like the summer after my third year.
Summer of 96.
Yeah, summer of 96.
Okay, and tell us, like, what was the meet cute? Like, were you literally in a class? Did you drop your pencil and you picked it up? Like, how did it actually happen?
I'll let you tell that part.
Well, so we were in a class. It was a seminar. It was a lot of fun. So we're reading everything from Plato, Nicomachean Ethics, and it was great. I was not a philosophy guy. I was taking other courses. But I had time to take this course in the summer frame. And so we're in there, we're in the class together. And then there's this girl in there and she's pretty quiet, right? But she comes and talks to me sometimes and it's kind of fun. And then we had a bunch of guys and we were kind of dominating this class. We're sometimes doing the homework, sometimes not reading all of it. Like when we got to Kant, nobody read it, right? And so we have to have a 3-hour discussion about this. And so on one particular day, we were doing what we normally do, which is bantering back and forth. And we're still actually arguing about stuff from Plato. We're not really covering what we're discussing that day. And Jean had done the work. of course, she'd done the work. And then the rest of us were just talking about other things and trying to distract everybody, including the professor, from the fact that we hadn't done the work. And then Jean kind of just let us have it. And she had both barrels loaded. And she just kind of, and so I was like, oh, that's interesting. So we became friends and, you know, a year later we started dating and there's some stories there too, of course, but I I finally asked her like in March, just before my birthday. And I said, hey, I'm having a birthday party. So would you like to come to my birthday party? And then I had to go home and get a birthday party going for myself. So I got my roommates to come with me to the bar and I fed them with beer, but I fed them with beer too early. And then they took off right at 9, just when she arrived. So it was pretty transparent.
Oh my gosh, that's the cutest story. You staged your own birthday party just so you could go on a date with Gene. Okay, so then your career, Colin, ended up in the military. Tell us briefly about how that happened.
I joined years before I joined as a reservist, and I went through that for a number of years while I was in school. As I was getting out of school, I was 16, working.
16, right? 16?
Yeah, 16. About 16 years old. And late 16. And then as I'm finishing up university, trying to find a job in way in the world, and I now have a serious relationship on my hands, I was a mass corporal, which is a junior sergeant in the American Army. I was teaching. I was enjoying that. I was in the infantry. And I started teaching full-time in the Army. And so I became an instructor, transferred to the regular force. In 07, I became an officer. So I went up the ranks as an NCO, and then I transferred over, became an officer, deployed to Afghanistan in 2011, came back, served in my regiment for a number of more years, and then eventually wound up in the headquarters doing coordination of training. So it was a long career. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the Army parts of it. That was a lot of fun. The headquarters stuff was more like, you know, coordination and discussions and things. Lots of planning, though. And so planning has always been part of my life for the last 10 years. So.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for your
version of it. So.
And then were you two married the whole time that you were working in the military?
He was in the military long before we met. So it was always part of his life. And I had no experience with the military or anybody in the military. So it was a whole new thing for me. And it meant that we were long distance for a lot of our dating relationships, especially like I would go off to school and during the time when he would be around and he'd be away during the summers. So we had to kind of navigate that, the long distance relationship, but it meant we had to communicate with each other a lot. So lots of phone conversations. And that was back in the times when you had to dial up on the internet and it didn't always work. And that would lead to misunderstandings. It's lots of fun.
We would be on the very first chat programs and things like that, trying to communicate and realizing the drawbacks of communicating on chat.
My God. What's the first chat platform you both were on?
What was it called?
XChat. I think it was on an X program. So it was a Linux kind of development, like a small Linux.
My husband and I often reflect on the amount of flirting we did via MSN Messenger. Let me know in the comments if you're watching this live. Do you remember MSN Messenger? We also used ICQ a lot. Like if anyone remembers that platform.
That was when we used,
Many, many, many flirtatious texts between me and my husband via ICQ. I actually printed them off and saved them because I was like, these are so like, they're like original love notes. Like I can't just delete them when ICQ went away. Anyway, So Gene, you are a clinical psychologist. When did that come about for you? Did you always know in college that that's what you wanted to do? And how did that work alongside your husband's military career?
Yeah, so it wasn't something I always knew I wanted to do. It was, I had a very kind of winding career path. So I see that as a God thing. God kind of kept nudging me in a little different direction. And eventually it came around to me being a psychologist. So I started out, I actually originally wanted to go into like pharmacy. And I didn't do that. I changed my mind at the last minute and went into music, which my parents had no problem with. But I studied music in my undergrad and eventually had developed an interest in music therapy. So I was taking a lot of psychology courses. So you couldn't have like a double major, but I pretty much had enough psychology courses for a major, but didn't get into the music therapy program I applied for because my audition tape got lost in the mail. So that didn't happen. And my mother, I kind of finished my music degree and my mother's like, well, you know, Steubenville has a counseling program. I'm like, okay, I'll try. So I just applied and I ended up getting in. And so I did that program. So I actually, when I first graduated, we got kind of married right after that. So we kind of got married and started our family before I really started practicing. And at first, I was just a counselor, not a psychologist. So for many years, I practiced as a counselor. But yeah, how the kind of military career affected that is that I did a lot of work online early on, mm-hmm. even before a lot of people were doing that. So I did a lot of online work and had to get used to kind of restarting my practice every time we moved. So that was a little difficult, but yeah, like I said, it helped me be innovative and kind of develop some different ways of doing things. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of story to some of this too, and God's hand is in this all along the way. But when we moved from, like, our most recent post before here was Nova Scotia, we moved back here, we couldn't sell our house in Nova Scotia, and we had to rent a house here. So I needed a job as soon as I hit the ground. I couldn't wait to build up practice again. So I ended up working with Mercy Counseling, which is part of Catholic Social Services here in Edmonton. And they helped support me in becoming registered as a psychologist. So that was kind of all a God thing too, right? I had looked into it before and it was a lot of work and didn't think I could do it. But yeah, they supported me and I became registered and eventually went back to private practice. But yeah, so it worked well that it was a career that I could kind of do online and be kind of flexible with. So and I could kind of do it, like we've had nannies at times too to help with the kids so that I could do my practice and yeah, and so you could go to Afghanistan.
How many times have you moved as a military family?
It's not as many as some people, but because of the big family, it's challenging. But
household more than moves across the country. There's only a couple moves across the country.
Well, we started in New Brunswick, moved to Edmonton, to Nova Scotia, and then back to Edmonton area again. So it's
How many kids now?
We have 7 now.
Beautiful.
Like, increased with each move. There's always a 1-year-old. Always a 1-year-old.
I love it. Every time I've moved, I've been literally 7 or 8 months, even 9 months pregnant. It's kind of weird. It's like just how we roll. So you cleared, there's a lot we could unpack with trusting the Lord, of course, many military families, but also all families deal with trial and struggle and unexpected things. There's so many things that we could unpack there. But I want to start in, you have clearly a shared love of supporting Catholic marriage. And that's really what I want to unpack on this podcast now that we have a little bit of your background. You have a shared love of supporting Catholic marriage. And there's a quote that I absolutely adore that you have on the website. The battle between the kingdom of Christ and Satan will revolve around marriage and the family. That's Our Lady of Fatima's quote. I'm going to read it one more time because it's a very, like when I read this, it hit me in the gut. The battle between the kingdom of Christ and Satan will revolve around marriage and the family. Can you both just unpack that a little bit for us? And why is that so important to you? Why do you care about this fight?
You want to start?
So the battle came to us. We just discovered that there's always challenges and they could be crazy. They could be silly. Like, you know, we could have squirrels in the house. We could have cars break down, but they could be pretty serious at times. We could have serious questions about safety or what's going on in our careers and whether we can carry on financially. Sometimes, you know, when you move across the country and you restart your business all the time, that means that Jean had to restart her entire practice every time. And that caused problems. And the Army doesn't really care if you're available. You're always available to them. So they're going to tell you to show up and do this and do that. And that's fine. That is expected. But eventually I kind of realized that I needed to find a way to enable this family to function a lot better. And we needed her to be able to reach her potential to do that as well. Right. So we always, when we had challenges, we always had to rely on prayer. We had to come back to prayer. And that just grew as time went by. And there's a ton of really excellent Catholic resources that helped us do that.
Yeah, and a lot of mentors in our life too, right? We've had a lot of great spiritual mentors. But yeah, I think it's, and I've heard you say this before, Lisa, too, that you almost have to expect that there's going to be spiritual interference, right? And be prepared for it. And I think that's how it's formed us. Like early on, you might think, oh, why does this happen to me? And I hear that a lot from people, like, well, why me? Why is there so many trials? But if you expect it and are prepared for it, then you can use those opportunities or see them as God helping you grow in your resilience and your ability to deal with the future challenges.
Growing in resilience is something clearly you do, Jean, with your clients in work, and of course would have to be, I would imagine, very present in a military career. Like you're voluntarily putting yourself in peril. I would imagine that requires some resilience. Let's talk a little bit about that when it comes to prayer, because I can get very hopeless, and I have to be reminded all the time, God is good and give him praise. And there are good things happening in your life, Lisa, but I can very frequently go back to like what you were saying, Jean, woe is me. Why is this happening? So tell us a little bit about what that looks like for you, practically speaking. How do you return to prayer when you are tempted to be like, woe is me? Why is this happening?
Well, I think that's where our partnership and being in this together is so important. I think it's often one of us will remind or say, hey, we need to get back to that prayer. We're not doing our family rosary, or we're not doing our couple prayer together. So, and I think some of it's experience along the way too, right? You see God's hand in things, and so like habits are hard to form. But I think also we, like when we get caught up in all the struggle, we so easily forget to do the things we know we should do. But yeah, I think just reminding each other and then forming those habits of prayer so that when you're not doing it, you miss it. You realize, oh yeah, I need to get back to that. And as we all hear often as Catholics, it's about developing that relationship with God too, right? So I always think of that quote from the Baltimore Catechism about where we're supposed to know, love, and serve God. And I think the more we know God, the more we will love him and long for that relationship with him and be drawn to that prayer and see the trial coming out like before it's in our lap, right? And be prepared for that.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would also say that God is always drawing us back in. So when we're in the midst of a trial and we're fighting something, or we've got multiple challenges and a bit of chaos going on, Christ, or, you know, it could be in Mass, it could be in the readings that you're doing, something will just peg for us and be like, okay, God is calling us back. And then that's when this is the experience part where you're, oh, okay, we need to go back to prayer or make prayer first again. Cause sometimes we're very tempted to solve things, right? We want to fix it, right? Just get on with it or get through it. And then what we need to do is actually come back to Christ and let him show us what the plan is. And then something will just pop. And he's done that so many times. We've had so many interventions where God's grace has just flowed in our lives and changed things. There's no reason for us to worry most of the time. Our worry is because we're not connecting with God. And that's what our experience has taught us.
Ooh, okay, Colin, I want to pick your brain for a minute, because in the military, of course, it's tactical. You're planning. Like, you don't go into a battle without a plan. You're currently a financial advisor, right? That's, when you think about it, that's a plan for the future, right? Financial advising. So I struggle so much with an over-reliance on plans. I get very fixated on a plan. I can be very, I've had to learn to hold hands with loose hands, you know, but I can be really, really, really white knuckle. I'm curious, again, we can sometimes have habits that, and via military career, you need those habits. You cannot go into a battle unprepared or without a plan, right? So how do you balance that with what you just described of trusting the Lord truly and the worry being reduced when you are very much in intimacy with him? How do you balance that with some of your more worldly needs to plan?
So the desire to plan, I think, is you know, it's innate in the Army career, certainly on the planning side and the officer side. So drawing up a plan, we do an estimate. We look at all the factors that are coming into what's going on. So I tend to do that even in my spiritual life, I look at those factors and I try to come up with different courses of action. Then I choose a plan and the other plans are still there. So when something goes wrong, we react and hopefully we've thought it through, but there's also things that we just do like prayer that is kind of like a drill. I'm under attack right now. What do? I have to go to the prayer. And so there's sometimes where it'd be great to like really connect with God and maybe go and do a holy hour, but there's sometimes when that's not even possible. So what do you do right now? And that's where I think the beautiful gifts of our faith are like, you know, there's a place for the rosary. The rosary is absolutely vital when you're just frazzled and shaken a bit. It's a place where you can go. That's an entry to that calm place where you can talk to God. So when I'm frazzled, when I'm concerned, I drop back, pull out the rosary, do the rosary, do a divine mercy, something like that. And calm, right? And then that's 5 to 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And now I'm a little calmer. I can kind of start thinking about what's going on. Talk to my wife. She's very calming.
So, even in the military, sometimes you have to trust that somebody above you has more knowledge of the plan than you do, right? And so I think that's part of it too, is knowing that God has a plan and it's not always the one that you think it is, and trusting that he's got a plan and you just got to follow along. He won't always reveal the whole plan to you right away.
And trust gives us a connection to understand that there is a plan, even if I'm not following it right now. That just means I'm disconnected a little bit and I got to sort that out. My plan, well, and I also, we have to credit God for a lot of the things that come into our minds. So when we get a good idea, we got to say thank you. And we have to thank God for that, because he's put a little bit of light in there so we can kind of see, oh, I should probably do this next then. Mm-hmm. And that could be a very practical thing, not connected to prayer, but it probably came from slowing down and trying to find a way through.
Yeah. And the grace of the sacrament too, right? We found a lot of times, this always happens on long drives, but when we do share our ideas with each other, they become inspired and we kind of each like riff off each other. And that's kind of what happened with this course too, right? So, you know, we got to remember to tap into the grace of that sacrament, and that God has a plan, not just for us individually, but for our marriage.
Well, you got a best friend and God gave her to me. So I better touch base with her and ask her what we should do about this next thing. And getting out of the army was like that. It's like, when is it time? We really looked at that for years.
I'm like, it's time.
Yeah, and then it was time.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So you hit on one best practice about, you know, when a family has to go through a lot of change or trial or struggle. We talked about prayer. Are there any other best practices that come to mind when you think about some of the things that your particular, the McKenzie family, has gone through in the last little while? What are other best practices that keep close?
Mm-hmm. Well, we were just talking about this. Like, one of the things we've learned to do through the moves is you learn to connect with people quickly, right? Get out there, get involved in the community. And one of the things that's kept us where we are here is we've connected with a good Catholic community. But, you know, kind of being like, you think of us as being the body of Christ, right? We need other people. We can't do it all on our own. And yeah, found when we've been able to connect quickly and really join well with a community, then that's helped us to thrive, and that contributes to that resilience too.
Yeah. So we jump into some things that are really familiar to us. That's true as well, because we had 7 kids. We had to pick a sport. We picked Taekwondo, so we've got a lot of black belts running around the house, and we've done that consistently, and we've always been blessed. So, you know, we arrived in Truro, Nova Scotia, small town, and we had to go looking for a Taekwondo place because that's what we do. And sure enough, one showed up and set itself up right in front of us.
I love it. I have a mom in my life and she's got, gosh, I think 8 kids, if I remember correctly. And I was a very young woman when I was sort of, you know, more in contact with her. And I was always picking her brain because I was just like, how do you do this with so many children? Like, what are, and her thing was swimming. She was like, that's the only thing we do, swimming. And she went even further. She was like, because when you can swim, you also can become a lifeguard. And lifeguarding is, at least at the time, it was an incredibly lucrative part-time job. So she just was like, this is just what we do. We live at the pool. They all work at the pool. They're all able to, you know, fund colleges with their lifeguarding money. And I just thought that was really, really interesting.
Some of our kids are teaching Taekwondo now too. So yeah.
Right. So incredibly practical. I love that. Okay. So I want to ask you, you've been married for how many years?
23 years.
7 kids. If you could go back to your first year of marriage, what advice would you love to offer a younger Colin and Jean?
You want to touch on that?
Well, I think that first start out, I would really have loved if we had spent more time like cherishing our time as a couple, because you know kids are going to come soon enough, especially if you're Catholic and you're open to life, and then the dynamic changes a little bit. And I wish we had spent a little more time establishing them. We did get there because I have this wonderful wife and she kind of explained we needed to spend more time together and things like that on us. But you can get into the roles and you can get a little overly practical at times trying to solve problems. And you need to spend, it's actually key that the team is working, and that's the couple and the friendship is working, and we worked on that. Mm-hmm. And we had to spend a little time together, and it was good. Mm-hmm. And we needed that time, and it was a great grace. That's the first thing I'd say.
Yeah. I think kids derive their security from that secure relationship in their parents, right? I think for me too, it's something we already touched on. I would want my younger self to know you can trust God and he's got a plan, right? Don't get anxious over little things. I say they're like transfiguration moments, right? Like now we can look back and see God's presence in all these crises of the past, or even the joys and trials, all of it. And we know now that when something comes up, it's like, okay, God's got this. He's got a plan. He's going to carry us through this. But that's not as ingrained earlier on. It would have been nice to be a little more relaxed about things and know that, okay, God's got this. So I guess that meant I would have had more faith at the time too then.
Let's talk about how you do make time for each other. You've got teenagers, you've got big kids. You know, it's funny. I think sometimes, and it's not inaccurate, but you know, when you've got all these small kids, you're like, I can't wait till they grow up. Right. But then they grow up and it's much bigger problems. Like it's a little less physically demanding. They can roll out the door. They can drive themselves, you know, all that kind of stuff. But oh my goodness, like my experience parenting teenagers now is it's not like it gets easier, in my humble opinion. And in some ways it requires more time, like more mental energy. So anyway, how do you two do that thing that I was referencing at the beginning of the podcast? Like, so your marriage isn't the thing that's put on that burner. You're not tempted to be, I'll deal with that later because I have more immediate, louder needs. What do you do to keep working on and spending time with each other in your marriage?
I think we developed an ability to get, like, be efficient, to find little ways to connect with each other and spend, like, show that we're prioritizing the relationship. And I always tell some, or not always, but I talk about this with some of my couples too, and they'll say, oh, we don't have time to have dates, and our kids are so needy right now. But yeah, so you have to find those little ways to connect. So we would, like, right even now, sometimes we'll just, like, let's go for a tea, let's just go for a drive, get a tea. And sometimes it's a longer drive, and those have been the times where we've had deeper conversations. But also early on, I think this was maybe your idea, but we would just, once the kids were in bed when they're young, then we'd have a nice meal together, right? Just we'd get something from M&M's, like pre-prepared meal, so it didn't require a lot of effort, but just something nice, light a candle, and just connect with each other. I don't know, anything else you want to add to that?
Well, I think also as they got older, we organized them more and tried to make them more independent. So we taught them to cook. They cook a meal each of them cooks a meal every week. And we help with the little ones, obviously, but the older kids are responsible for the meal. They have to turn in a meal plan. It doesn't always work, but we have bottom 10 meals for that. You know, you can always have hot dogs. But most of the time they've learned to cook, and we have a rather complex plan for cleanup and stuff like that. That gives us a little bit of, they look at the schedule and they know which job they're doing that day. And then they fight about that a little bit sometimes, but most of the time they just do it. And that gives us a little bit of time, and we can cut away. It helps us. They know it's is required, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to drive them around. We have to have a little time, and those are necessary. And
yeah,
this has come, that program kind of helps us a little bit to be a little organized, and gives us the little bit of wiggle room that we have to try and make a plan and figure out how to get out of the mess. Like if the laundry's broken and you have to fix the dryer in a big family, that's kind of a crisis.
So you mentioned earlier couple prayer. Are you willing to peel back the curtain on what it's like for the two of you personally?
Yeah, well, one of the things we did that I think was inspired earlier on, I think I saw people
that's inspired,
like yeah. At Steubenville, a lot of it was very trendy at the time when I was there to do the De Montfort consecration to Mary, right? And so when we were preparing to get married, I'm like, we should do this together. No idea the impact that would have. And we've tried to like renew that every year since. So for our anniversary, we try and do the De Montfort consecration. And yeah, we attribute a lot of the grace in our marriage to that, right? Especially we see so many friends and other couples around us struggling, and not like, yeah, we all have our struggles, but we think Mary, like that consecrating our marriage to Mary early on had a big impact. And then we've just like, we kind of wax and wane on a lot of stuff, but we always try and come back to something, right? Lately, we've been doing more, what do you call them? Kind of prayers, deliverance prayers.
Deliverance prayers.
Because we do see a lot of like spiritual interference in our lives. But yeah, I don't know, what else would you say about that?
I think it's focused around the, you know, we listened to Father Mike's separately in different cars at the time. We listened to Father Mike's Bible in a Year, and we did better or worse on some books than others. But you know, you do get a lot of the Bible and a lot of the Word, and it's wonderful. And then that's a good driving the car kind of one. So I don't do that one as much anymore. But the rosary has been constant. And we really picked up on that during COVID because we were locked down completely. So we did a lot of rosary. And it helped, right? And it drew us together as a family with the kids, helped establish a good practice. We have other prayers, deliverance prayers that we get to. We have specific prayers. We have a couple that we've written for couples and friendships and futures as husbands and wives and things like that. Mm-hmm. But those are kind of inspired in the moment. And it, as she said, it waxes and wanes. We work on it. And we always remember, we're always reminded when things are getting a little bit hairy that we have to come back to prayer first, and then it will start to resolve. If we reestablish our relationship with Christ, then the rest of it will start moving in the right direction.
So good. Heather from A Catholic Mom's Life. Hi, Heather. She says, I love this great advice. And if you have questions about building your domestic church, Catholic marriage, how to pray with your spouse, if you're watching this live, feel free to post them right now in the chat. So the two of you have developed something very, very special together that I am so excited to share, because Colin, I love your wife. Your wife has had such an impact on my life, on my central nervous system. Jean is a valued member of my mastermind. And so I've gotten to know her in the mastermind that I run with Stephanie Donahue. And honestly, just you're so calm. So there's two things that I want to share, that I want to invite you to share. The first thing is a series of reflections that you've created. If you love Jean's calm voice, you are going to want to immediately click on the link below this video, because Jean has created something truly like, just, I think you will be blessed just by listening. Even if you don't like comprehend or take in or take notes or anything, just listen and feel the soothing presence that comes from just listening to Jean's voice. Jean, you've created a series of daily reflections for Catholic marriage. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, it's a series of 14 reflections, and I kind of grew a lot in just creating these myself. And I think it's been something on my mind to do something like this for a while, because as a psychologist, you see lots of guided meditations and stuff out there, but you don't come across a lot that kind of integrate our faith in there as well. So this was my opportunity to kind of do that faith integration into something that we maybe do a lot or see a lot of as a psychologist. But I also kind of brought in an emphasis on the emotions as well. And I think just culturally in general, I think we're a little kind of emotionally not very literate, I guess. But I think there's some misconceptions that sometimes come up because of our faith too, right? And so I did integrate a lot of just emotional awareness, but also, you know, discerning what our emotions are telling us. I believe our emotions have kind of messages for us, and that God gave us our emotions, right? He's created us with emotions. So how do we discern the meaning and the messages that our emotions are telling us with God's, and what is he trying to tell us through our emotions? I think they reveal a lot about who we are as people, each individual. So it reveals who we are, and if we can be in tune with that, then we share that more with our spouse, which kind of ties back to what I was saying before about how if we know God, we'll love him more. Well, it's the same with our spouse. The more we know about our spouse, the more we know about ourselves, the more we can reveal to our spouse. And then the more we know about each other, the more we can love each other, and the better we can love each other.
I just have to peel back the curtain a little bit. Like, I had the pleasure of helping Jean put it together, right, as part of the mastermind. And so I had the pleasure of listening to all of them myself. And I just, every single one is like a mini retreat. So for example, day one is marriage as a friendship. Day two, marriage and conflict. Day three, the emotional bank account. Day four, who you love shapes, and I can't read the rest of it, but it's a really good ending of the title, cultivating a spirit of charity, love growing through love. What I love about this resource, Jean, is that you every single one, you pull together three different things. It's very interesting. There's always a Bible verse. There's always some kind of reference to who's the doctor that you reference a lot in the reflections?
Oh, Dr. Gottman or?
Gottman, yeah. So there's always some kind of a reference, I would say. How would you describe that? Like grounded in clinical psychology? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Research, yeah.
And then you have a reference, often you've mentioned Pope Benedict a few times, or you mention a saint. So it's a really interesting, you know, the proofs, I guess, the proofs that you offer in scripture, in church teaching, and then in clinical psychology, and then you go into emotion. It's a really unique blend and a very worthwhile way to spend, you know, 8 to 10 minutes every single day. So I want to encourage everybody to go and click the link. If you're listening to this on your favorite place to listen to podcasts, go to the description, and on YouTube and Facebook, it's right below where you're watching this. Go and grab those reflections. They will bless you immensely. And then the two of you together have created something called Holy Union Blueprint. Tell us a little bit about this experience for Catholic couples. It's a course and an experience for Catholic couples. What is it, and what will it help them achieve?
It's a big question. I think some of it integrates what I talked about with the meditations, but I was really excited to draw my husband into this because we've also kind of added that military lens to the whole thing, because, you know, we are the church militant. As we talked about earlier, we have to be prepared for battle. If this, you know, the final battle is going to be around marriage, then we need to be prepared. So we've taken that, you know, we've integrated a lot of military analogy. I don't know, you want to speak to that a little bit?
So those are long car conversations where we said, well, what would this be like if we looked at it as a battle? And what would we do first? So you mentioned the moment of strife at the start, where there's a big battle in your life and you're under fire is how an army guy would say it, an infantry would say it. So we do battle drills, and battle drills are a series of, in our case, 7 steps. And so we have a reaction to effective enemy fire. So if the enemy's hitting us, he's damaging us, we have to know if it's effective fire, if it's meant for us. There's a bit of discernment. Am I actually in a battle, or is that just somebody shooting? Because that's a real thing in the army. Like, is he actually shooting at me, or is he just shooting? And who is it? So in this case, you're trying to identify if there's an enemy. So we go through a couple of steps where we say, okay, the enemy is causing real problems for me. Now, what do I do? So again, back to the prayer. What's some quick prayers that we can say? So if I feel like I'm really involved in this and I'm really struggling and I can't think straight, well, I have to think straight or I won't be able to make proper decisions. So the first thing is to react. And in our case, that would be prayer. That would be like a St. Michael prayer, something like that, that can break the sequence of, you know, not panic, but like really high energy, really high, really, really bad emotion maybe, and kind of break that and allow us to think a little bit. And then we need to go to a safe spot where we can't actually get hit anymore. And that's, for me, that's always Mary, right? Mary is always there when I don't feel worthy or I don't feel able. Mary will always be there. I have a mental image of Mary where I can kind of go and hide with Mary, right? And so that's the effect of, and this was like a long conversation about what that would be like. And it's like, well, if it was a spiritual battle and we used the tools that we would use as a soldier, it would look something like this. We'd do this, then we'd move on. Eventually we'd start taking the ground back, and then we'd engage in the battle, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we want to walk through on some level. And we have some ideas for those going forward, but the one that we're working on right now has a bunch of fairly practical, we hope, steps to, mm-hmm. to walk
through. I love it. I want to share some of those practical steps in just a moment, but it makes me think, I love military analogies because they're very visual, very practical. And again, I imagine, I've never been in this kind of setting or education or in a battle of this kind, but I imagine they're extremely, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they must work. Like you must have some sense that it's going to protect you, because again, you're going into something perilous, right? We're with peril. My mindset coach training, so I was coached by the fine folks over at Metanoia Catholic, and Matthew Ingold is, forgive me, he's gonna be upset that I do not know what part of the military he is in, but he was in anyway. He taught at Quantico, and he would often use that, he would borrow from his Quantico experience, and he would often say, you know, you need, when you're creating a tactical plan, you're planning this many, forgive me for my lack of military terms, but this many good guys for this many bad guys. And he would, insurgents, that's the only term I can remember. And he would always encourage me, particularly because I struggle so much with negative and hopeless thoughts. He would always be like, how many good thoughts can you literally like stack up against your insurgence of bad thoughts? And that always stuck with me. The military language didn't stick with me, but just this concept of having a plan against the insurgents you know that are coming. And so I find that very, very fascinating when we can draw from military analogies and military training. But I just want to share some of the things that are on this site. And again, you can find the link for Jean and Colin's course wherever you're listening or watching. But I love this, make your marriage your most important endeavor. Again, I think that in my head, you know, in my head, I value so much my relationship with Josh, but then in practicality, because of 10 kids, because of both of us working, because of the many things that we're juggling, shuttling kids, driving, you know, homework, all the things, in practicality, not because of my desire to, but sometimes it's just like, oh gosh, like, how are you doing? I'm so tired. Okay. Well, you know, like, but I just love this. Make your marriage your most important endeavor. And then marriage is work and you need a plan. And so I just want to highlight, it's a union. So Holy Union is an acronym. And so understanding, navigating, introspection, observation, and nurturing. UNION is an acronym that you have. Tell us more about the content of the Holy Union Blueprint.
Well, I think that understanding piece is important, right? We need to, like, even in military terms too, but just, I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about marriage, and a lot of those myths come from our cultural understanding about marriage and such, but yeah, that kind of seeps into our Catholic understanding too, right? And so we know, yeah, that God created marriage and that it's a sacrament and all these things, but we still might think that, oh, well, everything should be like, because we're Catholic and are married, everything should go smoothly. But but no, we still need to anticipate that spiritual battle. And, you know, in some of my research for this course, I found that part in the catechism, which I feel is not always emphasized. It talks about how we'll have, like, there's, because of original sin, we have that spirit of domination. They even talk about infidelity and like how we'll, it will come up against each other, right? And so again, we need to anticipate that and understand the full picture, what's involved in marriage, and so that we can again then be prepared. So yeah, and then navigating, obviously we bring in a lot of the military analogy there too. But yeah, like we need to have a map. We need to know where we're going. We need to do a recce.
We need to do a reconnaissance. Yeah, we need to understand what's going on. Need to look
around
resources.
The military. I love it. I love it so much. So we're going to get some of the military analogies, military framework. And then Jean, of course, you're a clinical psychologist. While this is not therapy, this is a coaching experience. Mm-hmm. How does your experience as a psychologist, how will that show up here in this?
Yeah, well, I've almost 20 years now of doing marriage counseling with people, and I have learned a lot. I've experienced a lot and done a lot of, like, I tend to just read all I can about the things I am interested in. So done a lot of just research and understanding all these things. So and like that introspection piece, I think, like, brings in a lot of the emotion and stuff too. So I'm bringing in a lot of that, but bringing in a lot of understanding about what does work, what doesn't work. And just I guess that those things, right?
I love, again, you're so calming to me. Like, literally just spending time with you makes me feel calm. And then, you know, the central nervous system and your emphasis on emotions and you're getting us to be curious is incredibly helpful. And you ask great questions in your series of reflections, and I'm sure in your clinical practice. I could talk to both of you all day long, but I do want to ask, I think, two more questions. So question number one is, Jean, if you could take, well, both of you, actually I'll ask this to both of you, but if you could take Catholic couples by the shoulders, you know, and just like, you're just, you know, maybe Jean, you're talking to the wife, or Colin, you're talking to the husband, or I don't know, you're collectively taking them by the shoulders, right? And you're looking them in the eye and you're just like, I wish you knew this one thing about Catholic marriage. What is that one thing?
Mm-hmm. I might get in trouble if I did that, but I'm just kidding. I take them by the shoulders. No, I think I was kind of thinking about this before, and I think the one thing I really want them to know is that I think we often frustrate ourselves by trying to attain unattainable goals. If we try and attain unending happiness, which maybe that when we know, okay, that's not achievable, but if we try and attain like never disagreeing with each other or having to agree on everything, like all those things will frustrate us in the long run and just cause more tension in the relationship, right? Whereas if we see that marriage as that vehicle for growth, and in the Catholic lens, it's a growth in virtue and growth in, like, towards sanctity, right? So, but I think in the secular world and in our Catholic Christian understanding, growth is a model that works, right? It doesn't lead to so much frustration. There's a purpose in every moment, then the joyful moments we can learn and grow from, but also the trials and the heartaches, and it's all opportunities for growth. So just to stop setting those unattainable goals, which get you just like stuck in this rut, but, you know, focusing on something that will help move you forward. That would be what I'd want to tell people.
I would probably say, we're always going to have fights and conflicts at some point in our relationship. And I would say, fight for each other, not with each other. That puts her on my team, and I had to learn to do this. And once she's on my team, I'm absolutely fighting for her. And you're still going to fight, and you're still going to fight with each other. But the perspective is remembering that this is my teammate and my most important friend. This is my key relationship. So don't screw that up just because you want to score a point. Mm-hmm. Treat them like your best ally. And then, you know, when the fight happens, it's probably about something that's important to both of you or not, or it's really important to the other person at least. And then, you know, most of them are misunderstandings, right? Coming from different places or different emotional tempos. We always found that we were, you know, received a lot of grace because we were typically, when one of us was really down, the other one wasn't. And then when the other person would be really down, the other one, we could help pick each other up a lot. God made that temple kind of balance well. And just remembering that, that we're on the same team. So fight will happen, and you have to fight for each other. Mm-hmm. You have to fight for each other, not with each other as much. Well, that's the theory.
Yeah. And I think that, that team approach does two things. It helps you know, like, even when we're fighting, we still love each other. It's okay. We can still have that security in the relationship, but you're also more likely to repair the damage or the rupture that happens after, right? So you come back together, realizing, this person is on my team. We need to repair that. And as I talk about in the reflections and in the course, like, that repair is so important. And that's us, like, participating in that God's mercy, right? And God, like St. Faustina says, that's God's greatest trait, is his mercy. So if we can emulate that on any level, then there's so much healing and grace that comes through that.
Oh gosh, I love it. I want this on a mug. Fight for each other, not with each other. Somebody print that on a mug for me. I love it. Right. Honestly, I could talk to you both all day. I find this conversation even very soothing. Anna says in the chat, my husband is against counseling and self-help, but is open to biblical teaching and principles. So that's my angle. It's incredibly helpful. Thanks, Anna, for that. Heather says, so good having a plan for the spiritual battles in marriage. So my final question, what is the real battle in Catholic marriage?
I guess it's the battle to get to heaven and bring as many people along with us as we can. Right, really, that's our, like, yes, the church teaches us that we're, you know, the primary purpose of marriage is to be open to life and to be fruitful, but we're also meant to get each other to heaven. And sometimes we joke about dragging each other across the finish line, but then, yeah. And I think that's part of my vision with this course, is that the more we can be that, like, be those partners for each other and be that, be those marriages that are working towards that sanctity, the more we can be that example to other people. And it's kind of a grassroots thing, right? That just brings more people along with us, and we can kind of all pave that path towards heaven that we're supposed to be marching on.
I mean, we have this beautiful family, these beautiful children, and we absolutely want heaven for them. So how do we do that? Well, we're not expecting to actually become saints, but we better try for it. Right. There's not many other goals that are as valuable as that. And so if I want my wife in heaven, what do I have to do to that? And do I want my children there? Of course I do. And so pray for your kids and all the things that come with it. We do those naturally, mm-hmm. because we have the goal in mind, and the goal in mind was taught to us during our marriage prep. And it was a tape we're listening to on a road in the car. And it said exactly that. Your job is to get each other to heaven. Oh, okay. That's actually a good goal. That's not an easy goal, but it's a lifelong goal.
Yeah. And I think contributing to the Catholic community around us also, like, is motivated by wanting our kids to get there too, right? If we're building up the whole body of Christ, then that is also helping our kids to stay on that path.
Catholic friends, right? That's what we pray for. Lots of that.
Well, that's a whole other podcast. Oh my gosh. Jean and Colin McKenzie, I'm so grateful for you and for your example and your witness and for developing this resource. What's really fun is that you're running this resource, the Holy Union Blueprint, for the very first time. So you've got a couple of limited spots at a very special price. So I want to just encourage you, if you're listening to this at time of recording, they have just a few spots available for this first round. And then I imagine you'll have it in the future, of course, but just really want to encourage you, if you've enjoyed this conversation, if you enjoy the military tactics and Gene's calming, soothing voice, to come on and join. I can't wait to do it because, like I said, I've had the pleasure of listening to so much of Gene's voice and developing this resource together. And I'm just so excited. I will put the links in the chat also right below where you're watching this on Facebook. Anyone who is watching this live. Jean and Colin, it has been such a pleasure. Is there anything else you want to add today that you haven't already had a chance to say?
No, I'm good.
I think we said most of what needs to be said.
And then where can people go and follow you on Instagram?
Yeah, that's Holy Union Connect. Is that all they need?
Holy Union Connect on Instagram. I'm pretty sure that's your name. Holy Union Connect.
It is my name, yeah.
Perfect. You can go there and you can also get the links to all the things that we talked about today. Jean and Colin, thank you so much. God bless you. Everybody, have an amazing Friday and a happy weekend. Bye for now.
Are you a dream-chasing mom who wants to keep God at the center of her personal and business development? If that is you, I want to invite you to join me inside of my brand new group coaching experience, Wealth Without Guilt. This group coaching experience is for the emerging or experienced business owner who wants to clear up her mindset, clear up her thoughts around money, around her mission, needs the reminder and the clarity that there is something that she uniquely has been called to do, and that unique mission has been placed there by God. Wealth Without Guilt is an experience where you will get live coaching from me on your mindset, on the thoughts that are holding you back, as well as practical training, practical skills on how to build a personal brand online via my over 10 years experience building a business and a brand both online and off. Wealth Without Guilt is for the entrepreneur who wants to ensure she is not going to sacrifice her faith, her family, or what matters most. She wants to build a business and build impact and build wealth, all while being the best mom, wife, and homemaker she can be. And you can join me inside Wealth Without Guilt today. Doors are open today by visiting bit.ly/wealthwithoutguilt. That's bit.ly/wealthwithoutguilt. I'd love to see you inside our community.